40 years have passed since the Beach Boys released their groundbreaking Pet Sounds album, and next year will mark the 40th anniversary of the Beatles chart-topping Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. If you look at any credible rock publication's top 10 albums of all time list, you can bet that these two albums will be among them. But what happens when you take this? And add this. The answer is this. But the answer is also a cease and desist order from EMI and Capitol Records for copyright infringement. Clayton Counts is the sculptor of the latest mashup album entitled Sgt. Pet Sounds Lonely Hearts Club Band by the Beatles. Counts released it based on the request of some friends and did not expect many people to listen to it. Within days of his uploading the album, nearly 500,000 people had downloaded it, and it had garnered much attention from an array of blogs. Among them was Entertainment Weekly's. Mashups became popular when Danger Mouse, now a member of the popular group Gnarls Barkley, released the Grey Album, a combination of Jay-Z's The Black Album and The Beatles' The White Album. Don't forget that boy told you kid, that dirt on your shoulder. I probably owe it to y'all, probably be locked by the force, trying to hustle some things, that go with the Porsche. Like Counts, Danger Mouse was served with a cease and desist order from EMI. Ad Humber was able to secure an exclusive interview with Clayton Counts to hear the story of how his pet project garnered widespread attention. Hello, Clayton. Welcome to Ad Humber.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So what exactly is a mashup?
I don't know that there is any hard definition. I think that a simple definition would be a song that combines elements of two or more different songs to create a new song. It's a relatively new term.
So the Beatles, Sgt. Pet Sounds, Lonely Hearts Club Band, why mix the Pet Sounds and Sgt. Pepper? Why those two in particular?
Well, I think it was probably the most obvious material to mash up. And actually, this record was made at the suggestion of two friends of mine, neither of whom have had the chance to hear it yet, unfortunately. But they suggested this to me a couple of years ago, and I had thought about it a little bit, about doing a Beatles and Beach Boys mashup, but we came to the conclusion that it would be really funny to do the songs track for track, since each record had 13 songs. But anyway, I made it for them, and I never imagined that a million people would download it in a week. You know, I put it online, and then I was out of town for a few days, and when I came back, it was on Entertainment Weekly's blog, so it really did take me by surprise.
And what were you hoping to get out of creating the mashup?
It's funny. There seems to be a consensus among certain people that this record attempts to be accessible and fails, which I think is demonstrably absurd. I mean, you'd have to be a complete idiot to assume that this record is intended for mass consumption. You know, just the opposite is true. It is not just sloppy, but explicitly forbidding and intended for a fringe audience. But it made it into several major news outlets, so I'd say that makes it an unprecedented success, I think, in certain respects. As to what was expected, I really only desired to have it heard by a handful of people, and a lot of the people that enjoyed it are people who I was reaching out to anyway, and that is fans of experimental music and serial composition. I think it's an intentionally frustrating recording, though, so the idea that it was meant to be something huge and some abject failure is just absurd.
And after the mashup was uploaded, after you put it on your website, take me through exactly what transpired from there.
Well, I put it up. I actually started putting it up as I was making the songs. I was putting them up a few at a time, and I had a few people downloading it, friends of mine. I did a post on a mashup forum and a few other things, and so there were a few people downloading it, but none to speak of, really. It wasn't a tremendous amount. And then I finished it. I'd say probably took me about 35 hours to do the whole thing, but over a couple of weeks. And once I was finished with it, I just kind of left it, you know. And my internet connection has been wonky at home, so I was offline for a few days and having to go to the coffee shop just to check my email and stuff like that. And then I was offline again for another couple of days, and the next thing I know, it's, you know, all over the place. It had been downloaded a lot of the stats on it. It had been downloaded, you know, close to 500,000 times in 3 days. And that was surprising. So only a few days after that, about a week, I suppose, after it hit the blogs, I received a lengthy email from EMI. Unlike a lot of cease and desists I've seen in the past, and I've seen people who have posted them on their own websites relating to material they posted that was copyrighted, this letter in particular was pretty disturbing. I mean, the beginning of it, accusing me of having used copyrighted sound, which I can understand, but then also made quite a big deal about using the Capitol logo in the infringing artwork, as they termed it. They said that I shouldn't have made it. And then they also went on to say that by making it, by distributing it, that I'd cost them. And the cease and desist culminated with the demand that I hand over the IPs of everyone who downloaded it or streamed it, even if they'd streamed it from various other websites, and that I pay them a certain amount to be discussed, which to this day still hasn't really been discussed. I've asked them specifics on it, but I suppose it was tied in somewhat to the number of downloads. I gave them the information I felt was pertinent, but I didn't give them the IP addresses because I thought that was unconscionable. So,
why do you think that the lawsuit is unjust? And since after they demanded every single person's information, I mean, what's your response to that in terms of, you know, democracy and I guess the big picture in that sense?
Here's an interesting point. In the last couple of weeks, I've spoken to no less than 10 experts on U.S. copyright law, including a lawyer with the Electronic Frontier Foundation and several other attorneys working in the field. All but one of them has heard the record, and all of them believe, as I do, this is a legally protected work. I don't think copyright law exists to magically punish those who would dare to make something out of existing material. I mean, Andy Warhol wasn't slapped down for using popular iconography and registered trademarks in his work, and he made a great deal of money doing it. So the notion that copyright should somehow prevent people like me from making something whimsical that people enjoy, well, it's not in the spirit of the arts, and I would say it's even inartistic. I'm no copyright expert, but one thing I know is that I've been accused of having taken myself too seriously, but one only need listen to the record to see how insane that statement is. I mean, anyone who would incorporate the Super Mario Brothers theme into a Beatles and Beach Boys mashup, you know, the world loves a clown, and I gave him something to laugh at. But the real tragedy is that some of the most humorless people are musicians working in the music industry, or else they end up in dead-end jobs as arts reporters. So, I mean, it must be exhausting to have to pretend to be hip into your 60s.
So tell me about these people. I mean, the critics that you spoke about, and people that have listened to the album, what have responses been like to the Beatles? Do people enjoy it? What are people getting out of it, and what are people saying about it?
Well, I think enough people have enjoyed it. I've certainly received a lot of email, very positive and negative, but more positive, surprisingly, in my personal email. A lot of the comments around the internet have been negative, but that's to be expected. Well, just yesterday, a friend of mine sent me a link to an article written by Stephen Cole, the CBC, and he called the record a punishing failure. Although, when you read his 10-paragraph review, you find out that he only listened to the first track. So I would say that as reviews go, his is about the most punishing failure I've ever seen. I mean, Simon Reynolds, he ain't, you know. I appreciate commercial music. I have no problem with people making commercial records. This obviously wasn't an attempt to do that.
So, you know, Beach Boys and Beatles aside, tell me about Clayton Counts, the man himself. There's got to be more to you than the Beatles.
Yeah, well, of course, I don't want to be known as that guy for the rest of my life. Sooner be hung. I don't pretend to know anything about what people want. I mean, I could make a record that I thought was commercially accessible, but I don't know that I would necessarily be happy with it. The music I make is more abstract and loose and sometimes even sloppy, but I like to think that it's expressive at the very least.
So, Clayton, what have you learned from this whole experience, and what do you hope will be the end result?
Well, as to what I hope will be the end result, I have no clue. I mean, it's nice to have some recognition for some things I've done, but I suppose I wish it were under different circumstances. It's not terribly exciting thinking about what I may have to deal with in the next year, but as I said, I think it'll probably blow over. I don't think they're too serious about this. But as to what I learned from it, I don't think I learned any great lesson outside of the fact that, you know, it's really easy to upset people, and maybe it's not such a bad idea. I don't think it's my intention to be controversial, but I see how easy it is. And I think part of the reason that's so is because, you know, nobody ever really takes this kind of risks, and nobody wants to be the center of controversy. But this wasn't even a drop in the bucket, you know? I mean, I think if anything, this just taught me that I can outdo it and do something that will get a lot more attention and probably to the dismay of some of the bigger record companies.
So, Clayton, thanks so much for joining us on Ad Humber, the sculptor, so to speak, of Sergeant Pet Sounds' Lonely Heart Club Band. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
For Ad Humber, I'm Aaron Bronstetter.